You heard read from our Old Testament this morning the story of Joseph. Now that's, excuse me, that story is quite long, 13 chapters long, from Genesis 37 through the end of the book of Genesis. It's beautifully and artistically woven together like a novel, one of the best pieces of literature in the whole Bible. There are other pieces of literature like this novel in the scriptures, of course, but it's one of my favorites. And this reading doesn't come along very often. The lectionary that we follow is a three-year cycle, and we seldom get to this year in that three-year cycle. It might happen once every four cycles, so it's a dozen or more years before you hear that story read in worship, for those congregations at least that follow the lectionary. That's because Easter is so extra late this year, and I guess that's why we're having all this snow, because God realizes, well, Easter is still a long way off. We'll give lots of snow. We've had our share, haven't we? Anyway, the story of Joseph. And we just selected such few verses in the story this morning. These verses that were read come about three-fourths of the way through, if you know the Joseph story. I'm sure you know the story, pretty well known for those of us raised in Sunday school and the church. But please bear with me as I retell the Joseph story in my words, so that we might be on the same page as we look at this epic story. We begin with Jacob. He's the father of Joseph. Jacob, the old man, he had two wives and two servant women. Lumpy Leah, who was the mother of six boys. The two female servants gave birth to four boys. And then there was ravishing Rachel, whose name really means pearl. And she was the mother of Joseph and Benjamin. Now, these two sons from Rachel were the obvious favorites of Jacob because Rachel was his favorite. She tragically died in childbirth when Benjamin was born. So, Jacob has these six sons from Leah, four sons from the servant women, and two sons from Rachel. 6, 4, 2, add up to 12. So, the 12 sons of Jacob became the 12 families of tribes in the Old Testament. Joseph and Benjamin, as I already mentioned, were favored. Can you think of this kind of a scandal such an arrangement would make in our world today? This patriarch with who's fooling around with two servants, two wives at the same time. Joseph, in the midst of all that, is spoiled. The story says that Jacob loved Joseph more than the other sons. Why? Well, because his mother was Rachel, the favorite wife. And because Joseph was born when his father was old. He was the first son of Rachel. And then, as I said, Benjamin was born later in childbirth, and Rachel died. Joseph was spoiled rotten as a little boy, and he had this elevated opinion of himself. There are three evidences that Joseph was spoiled rotten and thought so highly of himself. He had a dream where 11 sheaves of wheat bowed down to him in reverence. He told his brothers that they too would bow down to him. Secondly, he had another dream that the sun, the moon, the 11 stars bowed down to him in reverence, and his 11 brothers would kneel before him in homage, is what he would tell them. And then third, his father gave him this special multicolored coat, and nobody else had such a fancy, colorful coat. In other words, Joseph felt he was the center of the world, and he certainly was the center of Jacob's world, and all his family would bow down to him. Of course, what did that produce? His brothers came to kind of despise him, hate him, if you will. They wanted to get rid of him. And can you blame them? Then one day Joseph was sent by Jacob out to the fields to check up on his 10 half-brothers who were tending the sheep. And when Joseph got there, the half-brothers decided, here's our chance, let's kill him, because they hated this dreamer so much. But at the last moment, Reuben, the oldest, tried to save Joseph and suggested that they throw Joseph into an empty well. And then Reuben could come and rescue Joseph later. Reuben had this kind of a sweet spot for him also. But about that time, a caravan is coming through and heading toward Egypt. The caravan is akin today to what we might know as coyotes, who transport desperate folks across international borders for money. So the brothers on the spot decided to sell Joseph to these slave traders for 20 shekels of silver. The brothers then took Joseph's coat, killed a goat, and put the blood of the goat on the coat so it would look like he had been killed by a wild animal. And then the 10 half-brothers took the bloody colored robe of Joseph to Jacob to show to Jacob. And the old man was stunned by the news of his favorite son's death, this first child by Rachel. And he never recovered from the shocking grief. Shortly thereafter, Joseph arrives in Egypt, sold as a slave to Potiphar, one of the Pharaoh's officials. He was the captain of the guard. And the story says that Joseph was, that God was with Joseph. And he prospered at whatever he did, as though he didn't have a big enough opinion of himself. Now he feels that God has a big opinion of him. Joseph was a great administrator. Potiphar put him in charge of everything that he had. And then the plot thickens. Potiphar's wife took a liking to Joseph, who the Bible tells us was handsome, well-built. In other words, he was hot. And she tried to seduce him. But Joseph was a man of character and good morals, in spite of that self-righteous attitude he had, and he'd have nothing to do with her. So she was jilted, and she framed Joseph to make it look like he had tried to seduce her. And this got him thrown into prison. Before you know it, Joseph was running the prison. In other words, wherever Joseph went, he ended up the manager. In that prison, there were two people in prison because the Pharaoh was angry with them. The Pharaoh's butler and the Pharaoh's baker. And the two men, the butler and the baker, had dreams. And no one could interpret those dreams. But all of a sudden, here's Joseph, and he could. Remember, he's a dreamer. So he interpreted their dreams and said that the butler was to be restored to Pharaoh's favor in a few days. The baker was to be hanged in 3 days. And 3 days passed, and the butler was restored, and the baker was hung. Joseph's interpretation of the dream was accurate, and Joseph told the butler, remember him positively to Pharaoh. The Pharaoh himself had some dreams now that troubled him, and he needed someone to interpret them. So the dreams were about 7 healthy and 7 starving cows, and 7 healthy heads of grain and 7 thin heads of grain. Symbolically, the 7 starving cows ate the 7 healthy cows in this dream, and the 7 thin heads of grain swallowed up the healthy ones. No one could tell Pharaoh what that meant. Then the butler remembered Joseph. Joseph was still in prison. In the blink of an eye, Joseph was standing before the Pharaoh and he interpreted the dreams. You'll remember he said that there'd be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. That's what this all meant. The 7 skinny cows ate the 7 fat cows. The 7 thin ears of corn ate the 7 plump ears of corn. Well, this made sense to Pharaoh, who then decided he needed someone to manage his country during the coming years of plenty and famine. So wouldn't you know it, Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge of all of Egypt and made him his right-hand man, with a position second only to Pharaoh himself. Joseph got a new gold ring, a new gold necklace, and a new chariot, a BMW, that rode right behind the pharaohs. Joseph managed all the grain storage operations in Egypt during the years of plenty, and when the great famine came, all the nations had to come to Egypt to buy their food. The famine was so great that it eventually affected Joseph's family way back there in Canaan. Now, we had forgotten about them during all this time that Joseph was ascending in Egypt. So, Jacob knew about the grain over there in Egypt. Excuse me, and he sent his 10 sons to Egypt to buy grain. But he kept Benjamin back because Benjamin was now the favorite in Joseph's absence. Rachel's other son, remember. When the 10 sons arrived in Egypt, Joseph recognized his half-brothers, but they didn't recognize him. Joseph slyly asked questions about the family. Was their father still alive? Did they have any other brothers? And then Joseph kept Simeon as a hostage and told the other brothers to take the grain back to their family, but they were to come back and bring Benjamin with them because he wanted to see Benjamin. He would then give them more grain. Well, the 10 half-brothers went back to Israel, told their father everything. The old man refused to let Benjamin go to Egypt, so they tried to stick it out because Jacob thought, well, what happens if Benjamin gets killed and sold as a slave? But the famine got worse, and the brothers simply had to return to Egypt to get more food. The brothers finally convinced their elderly father to let Benjamin go with them. So the half-brothers and Benjamin returned to Egypt to buy more grain. When Joseph saw Benjamin, he became very emotional but covered it up. And eventually, after much tension and discussion, Joseph then sent them home with grain. But he had his steward put his own silver cup in Benjamin's pack. So it looked like Benjamin stole the silver cup. What a conniving bunch of people they are. Then Joseph sent his steward after them. And the steward caught up with him and found the silver cup in Benjamin's backpack. He brought him back to Egypt, and all the brothers were frightened to death. The brothers wondered out loud if God was punishing them for what they did to Joseph so many years ago. They discussed their guilt in selling Joseph so many years ago in Joseph's presence, not recognizing that Joseph could. Remember, he was raised in their language, so he could recognize their language, even though now Egypt had a different language, or whatever. Finally, Joseph couldn't handle it any longer, and he ordered all the Egyptians out of the room, and he was alone with his brothers. And he then revealed his identity to them, and then he asked, "How is my father?" And he was overwhelmed with emotion, and he cried loudly that the Egyptians heard him sobbing. There's an emotional outburst of tears and feeling as the story climaxes. The whole family then, laden with treasures and food and wagon loads of gifts, was sent back to Canaan to get their father Jacob and all their families and bring them to Egypt. All of them, 70 in number, came to settle in the land of Goshen in Egypt, where Joseph took care of them. And then we come to the end of the story, and the end of the book of Genesis. Jacob and all the 12 tribes, all the 12 sons were now in Egypt. Their 12 families were expanding and prospering and were ready for the next book of the Bible. We're ready for the book of Exodus and the story of Moses, where we're told that now, all of a sudden, what we left in Genesis, these prosperous 12 tribes are now in slavery. But that's a story for another time. So this story has been yoked by scholars through the ages with a portion of Luke's rendition of Jesus' sermon on the plain, on the mount. In Luke, it's called the Sermon on the Plain. It's that same version that Matthew calls the Sermon on the Mount. And what is it that yokes these two scriptures together? That's our task this morning. Oh boy. It's really a difficult question because we can legitimately ask, how do Jesus' words to love those who love you and do good to those, to all, apply to Joseph, who as a teen and a young man seems to be Far from that. He lords it over others as his father's favorite. How can we approve of Jacob's cheating on his wives and having children by other women? How can we approve of Joseph's outright treasonous conduct by showing allegiance to a foreign power? Those are questions that are not answered. But there is one very simple lesson that we can take away with the help of our gospel lesson. The lesson of forgiveness. Joseph had the right and the power to punish his 10 half-brothers for doing what they did to him. He could have gotten his pound of flesh, if you will, from them, his revenge on them. But in his mercy, Joseph forgave his brothers and wept over them when they were finally reconciled. The gospel lesson invites us to love our enemies, do good to those who hate us, to be merciful just as God is merciful. And God will reward such a life. In the Joseph story, the enemies are the half-brothers, I guess, who tried to kill him. And Joseph responds to them eventually with love and forgiveness that is described. That same kind of love and forgiveness that's described in our New Testament reading. We hear the words of Jesus from the cross through them. Father, forgive them. Joseph forgave his brothers. One more story. Perhaps you remember this horrific story a little over a decade ago, October 2nd, 2006. A typical fall day. Birds could be heard in the distance and little else, except maybe the clip-clop of horses' hooves and the rattling of a buggy heading down a back country road. It's normally quiet and peaceful in those rolling hills in the Amish farmlands of Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. But that peace is shattered when the sound of gunfire is heard from inside an Amish school. And when local police broke into the one-room Amish schoolhouse, they found 10 Amish girls ages 6 to 13 who had been shot by Charles Carl Roberts IV, who had then committed suicide in that school. I'm sure you remember the story. School shootings are a far too frequent occurrence in our country. But this case openly displayed a clash of two different cultures. The modern, more advanced American society and the withdrawn community of the Amish, who intentionally attempt to distance themselves from worldly influences. The violence that is far too common in one society blasted its way into the nonviolent, peaceful community of the Amish called the Gentle People. The shooting took place at the West Nickel Mines Amish School, located about 12 miles southeast of Lancaster City. Nickel Mines is just a crossroad within Bart Township, a local municipality with a population of roughly 3,000 Amish and English, English being the Amish term for the non-Amish. The school was the typical Amish one-room school with a school bell on the roof, two outhouses, a ball field, and an enclosed schoolyard built in 1976. And on the blackboard in that schoolroom was a sign with a teddy bear. The sign read, "Visitors, bubble up our days." 26 children, ages 6 to 13, from three different local Amish church districts attended that school. Now, Charlie Roberts, if you will, Charles Carl Roberts IV, was a milk truck driver who serviced the local community, including the farms of some of the victims' families. 9 years earlier, his wife, Amy, gave birth to their first child, a baby girl. However, the baby died after living only 20 minutes. Apparently, his daughter's death affected him greatly. He never forgave God for her death, and eventually he planned to get revenge. But the emotional impact of this tragedy came in the hours and the days that followed. In the midst of their grief over this shocking loss, the Amish community didn't cast blame. They didn't point fingers. They didn't hold a press conference with attorneys at their sides. Instead, they reached out. They reached out with grace and compassion toward the killer's family. On the afternoon of the shooting, an Amish grandfather of one of the girls that was killed expressed forgiveness towards the killer. That same day, Amish neighbors visited the Roberts family, some of them bringing food to comfort them in their sorrow. Later that week, the Roberts family was invited to the funeral of one of the Amish girls who had been killed. And Amish mourners outnumbered the non-Amish at Charles Roberts' funeral. It's ironic that the killer was tormented for 9 years by the premature death of his young daughter. He never forgave God for her death, yet after he cold-bloodedly shot 10 innocent Amish schoolgirls, the Amish almost immediately forgave him and showed compassion toward his family. In a society where hate is the norm, even from the highest leader of our land and many who surround him, and in a society that often, like him, points fingers and blames others, this reaction was unheard of. Many reporters and interested followers of that story asked, how could they forgive such a terrible, unprovoked act of violence against innocent lives? The Amish culture closely follows the teachings of Jesus, who taught his followers to forgive one another, to place the needs of others before themselves, to rest in the knowledge that God is still in control and can bring good out of any situation. Love and compassion toward others is to be life's theme. Vengeance and revenge is to be left to God. True story. And it still impacts me today, perhaps because it happened in an area less than 10 miles, maybe 7 miles from where Amy and I lived in Pennsylvania, when I served as the senior pastor at the Lettice Moravian Church. It provides for me a true invitation to have a heart filled with forgiveness. May that be an invitation for all of us. Amen. Hymn 751, God of grace and God of glory.